The time is approximately 2:50. The date is April 27, 1984. The place is room 124 of the Judiciary Hearing Room, located within the Capitol Building at Juneau, Alaska. Members of the committee present for the hearing today are all members of the committee, with the exception of Representative Wimpy. Scheduled matters before the committee today were House Bill 505, an act relating to insurance and providing for an effective date; House Bill 412, an act relating to adoption of medical records and providing for an effective date; House Bill 421, an act relating to open containers of alcoholic beverages in motor vehicles; and confirmation, the completion of confirmations on Barbara Dale, William Smith, Jane Perkins, Roger Endell, Georgiana Lincoln, and Renee Murray. We've either talked to or heard all of these other people, with the exception of Roger Endell, who is with us today. And Mr. Endell, at this time, if you could come before the committee and maybe make a brief statement and subject yourself to questions by the committee, I'd appreciate it. Sir, since we are recording electronically, I need you to state your name for the record prior to any comment that you wish to make to the committee.
Yes, I'm Roger Endell from the Department of Corrections. I really didn't come with a prepared statement. I felt that it's probably more appropriate to answer questions, but perhaps in a general sense, I think we've got a bit of a unique situation in that we've got 14 or 15 months of a lot of hard work behind us, and certainly a long way to go yet, but I suppose that puts me in a little bit of a unique situation for confirmations, because people can not only look at some of the improvements we've made, but they can also examine some of the difficulties we've had. So I'd be happy to answer any questions that anybody might have.
Thank you, Roger. Questions by committee members and Mr. Endell? Representative Barnes?
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Roger, as of late, there has been considerable criticism and controversy surrounding the operation of the prison system. In particular, the food that is being fed to prisoners, for one thing. There's been several other things, but I'd like to start with that. I'd like to know what you've done precisely to correct the situation of feeding our inmates king crab, etc. I know you know the subject very well.
Yes, Representative Barnes. We've taken steps as soon as the story, I guess, came out that inmates at some of our institutions were being served expensive food. The immediate steps that we took were to suspend all orders of about a list of about five foods which we considered to be exorbitant in cost. Then we asked the Department of Administration to conduct a second party investigation and make recommendations to us on the past ordering practices, the feeding and so on of all kinds of foods. We've also hired on a temporary basis a dietitian to develop a six-week rotating menu so that all institutions statewide will be serving essentially the same meals at each institution at each hour daily, and we will reduce our food costs to some degree with that practice. Essentially, in spite of the occasional serving of crab meat and other expensive foods, our average food cost per meal is approximately $1.50. The highest it's ever been is just around $2. So it's even with those exotic foods, the food cost is very low. However, we will be taking steps to get some of those things off the menu.
Follow-up question along that line. Mr. Endell, I have had letters from some of the inmates that say that, in fact, there may have been purchases of king crab, but it was not fed to them. What do you have to say about that?
Yes, I've heard those same rumors, Representative Barnes. We are checking that out also. We have absolutely no indication of any abuse of that sort at this time. If there are any abuses, those would be prosecutable, and we would pursue that. I think the other thing that I should add is that some of these things that you're speaking to have been in practice in the state of Alaska for probably a decade. And what we have got here, of course, is a new executive level management with the creation of the department that's going down into the old Division of Corrections and bringing about changes. And some of those changes are rather painful. We do also have, unfortunately, I suppose as any organization, some dissidents in our ranks. And some of those folks are taking advantage of whatever controversy there might be to keep the flame fanned, I suppose. But that comes that's one of the difficulties of management in any organization. So I think we've taken very strong steps to try to correct several deficiencies. There are more that need to be corrected, and we're working on those now. Unfortunately, we're a very vulnerable department. The clientele that we work with is difficult, they're unpredictable. We have in the past had some difficulties with personnel. I was just showing one of your members here a short time ago the personnel actions that we've taken statewide since last February. They include, to date, to be something like 16 dismissals statewide, something in the neighborhood of 14 resignations in lieu of dismissal, one administrative termination, 19, 20 reprimands and warnings and other actions. Those have all been taken since I took office, mid-January of a year ago. And there's more to be done there, but we are taking those steps. Unfortunately, we are pretty vulnerable. We can become a real football in the political arena.
Further questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Roger, since the controversy of the King Crab deal came up, I don't know what happened there, but I would like to ask you. You and I attended one meal in another stateside penitentiary. Now, how does our meal, and you've been around to several of them, Lompoc and Ohio, I know, how does our meals compared to what we're feeding our prisoners up here and our dietary requirements compared to what you know of outside and what I know the meal we had in Santa Fe, I remember that. What's your overall feeling? Are we buttering up our prisoners up here in compared to other states? I'm just trying to get a feeling on that.
Yeah, I think it varies by institution here, but in an overall sense, the American Correctional Association people that we've had up here to look at our system in regard to the Cleary case and testimony and so on, evaluating our institutions, claim that we have a good food service program. In general, they're comparing that then with the other states. And I've been to a lot of other institutions in other states. I think probably ours is superior to many of them, and on an equal par to probably most. I've eaten excellent meals at some correctional centers outside and terrible ones. I think the only thing that's brought this to light is the exotic or expensive food such as King Crab. As I told the press, I don't often eat it myself at home, put it on the table for my family, and it's not a practice that I think that we need to follow with the inmate statewide. And it's just simple, straightforward logic. It's a practice that's been around for a long time. It isn't, in spite of the newspaper report, as a matter of fact, I would invite any of you to take a meal at any of our institutions anywhere in the state and sample for yourself the food. It is institutional food. It's good quality. It's served in appropriate condition and quantity. But I don't think it's exorbitant as a routine practice.
I'd like to follow through on one other question, Roger. Now, last year, I believe your institution at Sutton harvested approximately 130-some tons of potatoes.
That's right.
Now, are you utilizing all that? Are if you able to break down as to a cost saving to the state by utilizing inmate labor for that as a saving to the state?
Well, ironically, there isn't a big cost savings because the rules laid down in the statutes on prison industries and by the Industries Commission say that we have to pay the going market price for those potatoes. So our institutions pay the same that they would to a Palmer farmer, for example, who grew the same potatoes. But that money goes back into the Prison Industries Fund, which can then be used to create other kinds of programs in industries and put more people to work. But it's efficient because we do employ a lot of prisoners doing those kinds of things. We store the potatoes and then periodically we ship them to our various institutions. And there's been some controversy there too, most of it unfounded, because the former farmers do not grow enough potatoes to supply the market in the Anchorage Bowl area, at least now. So we're not competing with them. We're not putting anybody out of business. There is a bit of a misconception about that, but clearly, I mean, economics folks will tell you that they're not producing enough to meet market conditions now.
Is there further questions that you have at this point? If not, if not, thank you very much, Mr. Rendell.
Okay, thank you.
What I desire to do today is complete the work on the named persons I read off to start with. We've received all of the information that we've asked for, that I outlined to the committee last time we heard the other conferees' names, with the exception of Ms. Barbara Dale, and she's, for whatever reason, she either hadn't gotten around to responding yet or it's coming. I did talk to the boards and commissions lady yesterday, who is going to have Ms. Dale get that stuff up to us. And the other comment I have was with regard to Ms. Renee Murray. We've received some glowing letters of her qualifications there. I think she's probably miscast. She should be nominated probably for governor or something. She's all from all across the state. Your father was here, all kinds of things on reading her. So perhaps, I presume this needs a motion. Many of you can read from that president remarks.
Chairman, is it your pleasure to move them all on the same piece of paper?
Yes, I put them all on one. I believe they fit on there, and I've talked to Representative Clark. I don't believe there's any, is there any committee dissension or any objection to moving them all on one? Anybody have any different recommendations for each one? We can put them all on each individual, but I don't sense there's any different recommendations, so.
Mr. Chairman, it would be very difficult to put a recommendation on one of these other than do pass recommendation if they're all on the same paper, and I do have an objection to one.
All right, we can certainly prepare those individually.
Although I'd be glad to.
Is it a long written the way I prepared the columns is the left column would be simply a do pass from the committee, and the right column would be, if you had any other thing to do pass from the committee, you could make a comment if you'd like to write one. And I put a statement at the bottom of the form that says signing two passers does not indicate your desire to vote for or against them at such time that a joint session is held. Representative Clark?
Right. Let me just clarify, as I understand from that form, if one were to sign the left-hand column and simply sign your name, it would be voting to move them all from committee with no recommendation.
Okay.
And you'd have to put due pass or something on to have any other recommendation.
Mr.
Chairman, I move and ask unanimous consent that the members of the Alcohol and Beverage Control Board, Ms. Jane Perkins of Nome, William K. Smith of Anchorage, Department of Corrections, Mr. Roger Dell, Judicial Counsel, Ms. Renee Murray, Commission on Judicial Conduct, Ms. Georgiana Lincoln, Ms. Barbara Adele, be moved from the committee with individual recommendations.
Is there objection? Hearing none, we'll move the appointments as read from the committee today with your individual recommendations. This will take a minute to sign on this. Is the next matter of interest before the committee We had House Bill 505, and House Bill 505 is a, an act relating to insurance and providing for an effective date. So we did a very lengthy, pretty substantive develop for this, incorporating, because of the time of the session, some wishes from the Department of Insurance, or from the insurance people, on, from the administration into this bill. And we have both Gene Matthews and Don Coach here. Gene, are you going to testify right now, or are you just here to wait and listen? Or?
If you
know. Well, if Don can, then you can answer questions that Don, perhaps on behalf of the Division of Insurance, you could, are you familiar with the community substitute? And,
yes, sir.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
We had to allow what Don is to be able to get it in the shape it is.
My name is Don Koch. I'm Chief of the Market Surveillance Section with the Division of Insurance. And this is a bill we'd very much like to have. I have reviewed the committee substitute. There is one minor problem, and it appears on page 10, line 25. That makes a change in chapter 39 of the insurance code. The referenced statutes, that is 2106, 170 through 230, are the hearing provisions set up in chapter 6 of the insurance code, and there's a specific reference, I believe it's in 240 or maybe even in 230, that says that that particular set of sections does not apply to chapter 39 actions. Everything else is fine except for that one. It does present a conflict only in that chapter.
Do you have a proposed solution, or we just have to add some language in
either, here? Either to just omit the additional language on that particular line, or I really don't know just how to approach that. We would hold a hearing in any event on a rate violation. Basically, that's what that section is dealing with, the insurance rate law. And it is boosting the civil penalties for rate violations from $50.
Well, I think that was the desire on the part of the committee, is to make sure
that we do hold the hearing.
That there was a hearing, and the commissioner wasn't given the right to start imposing things without a hearing.
I would just say remove the language as provided in 2106, 170 through 230, and just say following an appropriate hearing. Just leave that as it is, and just remove as provided in AS 2106, 170, as 2106, 230. That still requires a hearing. There is a hearing structure set up in 39, so we can, I think that would respond to it.
Sure.
As to what the bill does, without getting into a great deal of detail, we have been facing a problem during the past year or two where we're finding more and more bad apples, if you will, and we're finding an inability to get a handle on them, in part because any violation of the insurance code is a criminal violation, but it is often not an administrative violation. And so we have this criminal provision sitting there that says you've committed a misdemeanor, but no way to get them if we can't interest an attorney general or a district attorney in taking a case, which may be peanuts as far as he's concerned. So we've got these guys out there who continue to play games with the insurance law, knowing that nobody's really going to touch them. What we have been successful to some degree in doing is issuing cease and desist orders, or going after stipulated agreements and bluffing. And that's it's not a very comfortable way to regulate. That's one piece that we've tried to tackle with this by making any violation of the insurance code also a civil penalty. So we can either go after it on a civil action, or we can go after it in court on a criminal action. And that's what really the great length of this bill deals with. We have taken all of the criminal provisions in the insurance code and concentrated them into one section of the insurance code. It's in the trade practices and frauds section of the law. That makes it a little easier to find find these things. You don't have to go all through the code trying to find out what criminal penalties are available. The other thing we've done in here is we have set up an immunity provision in those cases where we've deputized, let's say, an insurance department staff person in another state to assist us in an investigation. When we do that, that will let that particular insurance department access the information that's under review, under study, investigation, as well as ourselves, and it will extend, since we're the initiators, it will extend immunity under our statute for their appropriate actions. In other words, if we deputize them to conduct an investigation for a particular action, and they do so, they cannot, they will then be extended some protection under our laws, as well as whatever they may have in their own. In connection with that, there's also a provision in here that says to an insurance company that if you have knowledge of criminal action or a criminal claim, let's say, a fraudulent claim, you must advise the director of insurance in writing about that once you have knowledge of it. And that immunity that I just spoke to will also extend to that insurance company for providing that information. The director would then investigate that, and if indeed there is a criminal action there, or activity there, he would inform the appropriate prosecuting authority and we'd be off and running. It gives the director a fair amount more teeth in some areas, particularly in his ability to conduct an investigation. That's pretty much it, Mr. Chairman. As long as the bill is, that's the guts of it.
That's your thing for all these words?
It's also lengthy because each section, each chapter in the insurance code has its little violation section, and we're shifting that section from a criminal provision to a civil provision. And then we're taking all the criminal stuff and sticking it in another area. So that's
as you know, these councils have spent quite a bit of time going back and forth through this and working this thing out. Outside of, I'm sorry we missed those words. He just thought he found a thing on page 11 that didn't read right, but I guess if you read all of section 12 all the way down, it does read right. It does read into it.
I believe 12 is okay.
Yeah, I think it is if you read it all the way through.
Chapter 39, section 11 is the only one where we have that particular provision that says the 2106, 172, 230 don't apply.
Okay, well, as it is, you know, we haven't adopted this work draft. It still is titled a work draft, so we can strike that without going through an amendment process to remove as provided in the AS 2106, 170 through 2106, 230. That's the language you're talking about.
Yes, sir. I'd like to express my appreciation for hearing this, too, by the way. It's something we'd very much like to have. We weren't at all sure that it was going to make it.
Technically, the bill might have, it might have Representative Martin's name on as a sponsor, but it,
we were,
it
we
technically
were involved
is
in
a,
yes,
a, an administration bill at the moment. So, on the work draft and on page 10, line 24, we'll just strike those words. If I could have a motion to adopt this as the committee substitute, then we'll bring it before the committee. Representative Westcott?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee substitute for House Bill.
So we have to adopt as the committee substitute.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I move that we adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 505, Labor and Commerce.
No, Judiciary.
Oh, Judiciary. You're going to put it on our own amendment, right? Judiciary. Strike out Labor and Commerce and Judiciary Committee.
Representative Whisker, this is the bill that we're going to have.
Well,
you've got it right there in your left hand.
You need a minute. I'm trying to...
Representative Lowe?
Do you have a motion?
Yes.
I don't know if I want to handle it before or after you rule the motion, but we have this issue that was brought up dealing with section 11 of the bill.
was it, as it was a work draft, before we adopted it, you know, I said we can scratch out as provided in AS 2106-170 through 2106-230, just simply scratch that out. While if you had a work draft, and with that scratched out, we're ready to adopt it as a ready substitute, so we don't have to delay the action and it then becomes ready to go. President Malone?
Yeah, so just to make sure I understand, so that in the proposed committee substitute, the language then would read, if the director finds following an appropriate hearing that a person or organization is violated, et cetera.
That's right.
Okay. I remove my objection.
Yeah, the same, the appropriate hearing language will trigger the hearing process that's now provided in statute anyway. And, if you kind of note throughout the bill as it got transferred, like if you go into section 12, that determined that the director, that same language kind of got inserted all the way through there.
Right.
All right. Now let's try it, Representative Liskin.
Yeah, let's see, I'm going to start back all up again. See, that was the amendment we were putting on page 10, wasn't it?
Page
10, line 24.
10, line 24, just scratch out. It's not an amendment. As provided, we'll just scratch that out.
Yeah.
What I need the motion to say is that we want a motion to adopt the work draft as the committee substitute for House Bill 505 as issued.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that we adopt committee substitute for House Bill 505 as issued by SOFO, dated 4/26/84, as the committee substitute and lining up as on line 24. Alaska Statute 2106-170, 2106-230.
Is there objection?
The committee substitute.
Is there objection? Hearing none, committee substitute for House Bill 505, Judiciary, is before us as a Judiciary Committee substitute. Is there discussion on the committee substitute now? Matthews, do you have any comments that on the committee substitute?
I sense that Representative Martin supports the changes that this committee has made.
Okay, I need that for the record. Thank you, sir. Representative Liskin, can we have a motion to move the bill for committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the committee substitute for House Bill Number 505, Judiciary. As noted on committee substitute on page 10, line 24, accepted to be moved from committee with individual recommendation.
Is there objection? Hearing none, committee substitute for House Bill 505, Judiciary, and moved Judiciary Committee today with individual recommendations. Everything Cox?
Ready to go.
If there's nothing further to come before the committee at this time, we'll stand adjourned until 1:30 next Tuesday.